Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Candid, where we have real talk with real people. I'm your host Shanae, and today I am here with Selena. How are you doing today, Selena?
Today drained me, but I'm good.
I can feel that. Life is ghetto, guys. Like, with the holidays coming up and just work life in general, it's just been very ghetto. But you know, we persevere. So today we just have two small things we want to talk about, and then an ongoing topic. Well, actually all of them are ongoing actually, but we wanted to touch on rape again, because it's become a major thing in the news in the last, I think, 2 weeks. I've seen quite a few stories talking about it. But before we get to that, I wanted to talk about the skill gap that the Ministry of Labor is currently saying that the Bahamas is experiencing. So, if you know, a skill gap basically is when a country lacks certain skilled laborers in certain areas, for instance, construction or teaching or nurses. And what they would do to fill these gaps, because as a result of not having people working in these fields, we have shortages. We have less people available to do work that's necessary. So what countries tend to do to combat this type of thing is they bring in foreigners to fill the gap if they can't find anyone from their own, well, if they claim to can't find anyone from their own country to work in these positions. So, according to the Labor Director, Robert Ferguson, from September 1st, 2021, until August 21st of this year, there have been over 13,000 applicants for labor certificates, and most of them were in the domestic field, but a lot of them were also in professional field, according to Director of Labor. So he then goes on to say, the Director of Labor, that we have these non-Bahamians who are issued work permits because we don't have the skills of qualified Bahamians to fill these jobs. Parkinson said that one of the main issues that have been identified as significantly impacting the skill gap is brain drain, with many young Bahamians opting for lucrative jobs abroad. Okay, it says IT specialists, medical practitioners, financial service workers, welders, plumbers, and carpenters are some of the many jobs that are in high demand for certified Bahamians. How do you feel about this? Do you think they're actually looking for these people? When he said a lot of Bahamians are leaving for more lucrative jobs abroad, I think that is a good point that he made. And I'm not going to disagree with that. And as a young person who works in the Bahamas, who has went to college and I've obtained a bachelor's degree, there are a lot of reasons why people should stay, but I feel though I understand why so many people go. And I feel like most people, when it comes down to staying in the Bahamas, who are professionals or whatever, I feel like a lot of it comes down probably to just wanting to stay in their family. But when it comes to making money wise and having a better, having a better quality of life, but it's just what it is. Like, if I could go away and make twice as much as I'm making here, why would I stay here when our country is literally one of the most expensive to live in on this side of the world? It's very expensive to live in the Bahamas, and the minimum wage is at $5. And even with a degree, people don't want to pay you much more than minimum wage, to be honest. Let's just be honest with that, because I remember one of the first interviews I came out of school with, and I went and I went there, interviewed for the place, and they asked me what I wanted to be paid, which is a general question that people ask. But normally when they ask this question, it's not to shame you or anything. They just want to know where your head is at. But when I went there, I was told by the gentleman that, oh, what I was asking for was too high, and I was automatically disqualified from the position. And I've never been met with a response like that ever in my life. Normally people tell you, oh, well, that's a bit out of our out of our realm. That's not what we were looking to pay for this position. However, so and so and so and forth. But the man literally tell me like I was expecting too much and I wasn't supposed to be, I need to be making that and all the things. And I'm just there like, gee. And I didn't even ask. He acting like I was asking for like $1,000. I think I asked for like 450 or something like that. And based on if based on statistics that were provided by the University of the Bahamas on how much it costs as a single person to live in the Bahamas, that number would have been what was on par with that. So it wasn't like nothing that was, I felt at least, that was unreasonable. That's something you can let me know if I'm wrong. But he basically asked me what I was making in my last position, which I was a sophomore in college working part-time as a delivery driver. And I made between $8 to $10 an hour. And he was like, oh, that sounds more like it. But then my question was like, but I was, that was 2 years ago, one. Two, I don't have the, I have more experience now, and I'm also, I also have a degree. So why must I work for only $100 more than minimum wage and stay in this country when I could go somewhere else, make more money? Yes, I would have to relocate, but nine times out of 10, I if I I'm not going to be getting paid that little, basically. And a lot of Bahamians have the opportunity, especially those that go abroad, a lot of them have, a lot of them try to stay. They try to get internships and to gain experience and to find some place that will take them on because it's a way out for them. And not only can they stay, but they're to better themselves and to have their family there if they want that, but they can also help their family in Nassau who may be struggling. For a lot of people, education is a way out. And I feel as though the government needs to realize that there's a lot of things that they have to fix before young Bahamians want to stay here. And it's not even just the cost, it's also the scarcity of jobs.
For me, I concur with what you said, but I think the priority of the Bahamas is not on its people. And when I say its people, I mean specifically, how do I put this? The lower class. I think the priority, they say, oh, we're gonna do this to bring more jobs. We're gonna do this to equip Bahamians with the skills that they need, that is needed. We're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. They make all these promises, and then when they come into power, you see they give the same set of persons the same set of contracts because you know you gotta help out who helped them get into power. Then you see that, and not speaking to the I'm just speaking in general when it comes to governments and what we've seen, the pattern what we've seen over the years, I at least the years I've been alive. Then they buy a hotel or they erect a hotel or they make this agreement with this party to do this and to do this, and we just see money is just being pumped into tourism, just pumped, pump, 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 pumped into tourism. It's like that's the main thing each government could do, tourism. And so now there's no wonder why you see that there is a quote unquote lack of perfect persons within certain needed fields, because I don't think it's the lack of persons that is the problem, because we have a lot of behemoths who are very talented with their hands. However, they never went into school and they never got these qualifications that is needed to jump the hoops into different bureaucracies and stuff like that. I think the problem is that you just have a lot of persons who don't have that background that they're looking for, and I think that's a huge a serious issue that we have in education, is that I mean, the Ministry of Education is now working towards not having so much an academic, solely academic based curriculum, but it's still like that. I think that it would be beneficial if us as a country look at the system that countries like Jamaica have, that by grade six, if you are making a certain grade, you don't pass that. I can't remember what what they call their grade six exams. However, if you see you don't make that grade, you go to tech school or you go to an tech invocational institute. While if you are making those high academic grades, you will go to a school that is specific for that. And so these children are now being equipped with the skills that they needed to have a trade. And it's not just them having a trade. They now go on to now getting the certification, the different certification degrees or whatever that they need to now jump into these hoops that is needed in order to get these higher end jobs. And so I think that's something that we need to adopt. We have students who are in mainstream who do not need to be in mainstream. And it's not trying to exclude them from mainstream, but I think that we're doing a lack of disservice to them by trying to make them how can I put it? It's like putting a dog in a fishbowl. The dog doesn't belong there, but we're trying to make it a fish anyway. That does not make sense. You're not doing anything right by that dog. You're only making them feel worse, and then that's where we get the dropouts. That's where we get, oh, I'm not fitting in at school. I'm not fitting in at home. Man, let me just join my gang where, these people really look, quote unquote, looking out for me. I'm actually making money. Like, I could do this. I could do that, And so I think a lot of our, I'm not trying to make oversimplify the solution to this problem, but I think it would be very beneficial if now we just shift our perspective so much on tourism because we made that the number one ish industry. It's going to be hard to switch from that. However, I think that greater steps should be taken to switch from that into investing in our people. Because let me tell you something, the amount of money that the government pays on renting facilities for their government agencies, the amount of money that the government spends on getting persons, foreigners from outside of country to bring them here to work for us, the amount of money that we spend on these different traveling and projects that were said that we need that is needed in order to develop our country. And when they say develop our country, they mean develop Nassau. That's a totally different subject on the whole. But it's the amount of money that we spend. I honestly question who they have sitting in these seats advising the top persons within the government, because it's just like it's been the same game plan over and over and over and over, the same set of persons being rich. And I'm not speaking of specific persons, I'm just speaking in general, but it's just the same for the past, I don't know how many years. It's just the same thing over and over and over. You take one party out of power and you put the next party in. It's like when it's election time, they're the worst of friends, but then when you look, election over, everybody winning, because at the end of the day, their pockets, they still, living their lavish life when it's really us who's suffering. And so my thing about it is just that they're crying out, oh, we want our children to come back. We need our young behemoths to come back and develop the country. But when I come back, the opportunities that I have elsewhere is not here. I'm treated, you know what it is. I had my friend's sister, she came over for her wedding, right? And this girl was literally telling me that as an Amazon worker, right, she's making up to $22 per hour. As an Amazon worker, $22 per hour. Me with a bachelor's degree in education, I'm not even making nearly anything near that. I'm bringing back home less than $30,000 annually. Why is it, especially if I go abroad to school, why would I bring myself back to that? What's the real incentive? If you could pump all this money into other things, why can't you pump the money into actually paying behemoths so that they will want it? I mean, that's the first rule as being an employer. You have to make sure that your employees are satisfied in order to make sure that your business runs. If you don't have the incentives there to bring these children back, don't try and make them guilt trip them about, oh, you should want to come back and intrinsically help your country. Yeah, but who wants to be surviving? I barely survive, and the middle class in the Bahamas has almost been successfully obliterated. We literally only have upper class and lower class now. And it's not that these people don't have skill sets, but it's just that it's like those just the way our country is set up. It's very hard. It's very hard to make it from the bottom to the top. Very hard. Because no amount of saving, No amount of frugal spending, no amount of any of those things can make up for lack of compensation. It just can't happen. And so my thing is that before you start pointing and saying that we need to bring our youths back, we need to do this, we need to do that, you need to look at what's wrong with the system as it is now. Why aren't the youths coming back? What are the reasons? How can we rectify that? And then you start the conversation from them. But don't try to put the problem or point fingers at anything else when there's something wrong at home. There's a serious thing wrong at home. Because no way you should be graduating from college with a bachelor's degree in some of the areas that these persons are this so quote unquote government is looking for, and you can't even get a job. You waiting for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. I have persons who graduated with me, and that you hearing on the news, oh, we need teachers, we need this, we need that, especially English language teachers. I have persons who graduated with me, and they're still awaiting their letters. But I'm just saying, there's a lot of things wrong, and our priorities are messed up. And who can blame persons for going and help and going and making sure that they're having a better life? Because at home, my government ain't checking for me. My government ain't making sure that I'm priority. I need to go where I am. So, yeah, that's just my 5 cents on that.
Yeah, I agree because listen, if I apply for a job in Canada, then my ideal place probably would be to go to Canada. But even if I get something in the United States that's in a state that I can live in, because I know some states are more expensive than others, I'm gonna go. And that's just the sad reality of it. And that's how most young Bahamians feel. Listen, if I could go over there, if I struggle in here, and I only making $10 an hour. Frankly, because you could struggle anywhere. And moving to different countries is a whole different ballgame. I understand that you gotta start from zero. There's a different tax system, there's a different way of life. But a lot of people, if you tell me, okay, I could go from making $10 an hour to making $30, $35 an hour, and the cost of living is not nearly as high as the Bahamas, I'ma go. Most people are gonna jump at that opportunity, and that's just what it is. Because if I could survive here with little nothing, I could survive over there, and that's a bit more than little to nothing in a lot of people's eyes. And like you were mentioning with the lady who said she works at Amazon, we're not even gonna talk about Amazon and their bad work practices. We're just gonna look at the fact that, talking about the salary, but. Yeah, that's granted they have a lot of frigid rules and weird things. There was even this thing saying that they couldn't go to the bathroom and people had to wear diapers and things. But yeah, but that's what they're meaning for their labor and Bahamian employers don't feel that someone's time is worth that. Unfortunately, that's what it is. And a lot of business, I'm not gonna say this is every business, but a lot of successful businesses make their money off the back of paying people as little as they can by emphasizing their profit margins. At least that's how I see it. Because if you have a $1 trillion company, a $1 billion company, even a $1 million company, why, in my opinion, and your employees work very hard. Like I said, this is my opinion. You know that the cost of living in the Bahamas is very expensive. Why are you still paying the minimum wage? Why does it take the government raising minimum wage for you to want to pay him your employees more? That's my question. I'm not talking about struggling businesses or small business or even medium-sized businesses, but I'm talking about these big corporations that come here that have lots of money and choose to pay the bare minimum. Because I'm not going to say it's all on the government. It's also on employers too, because you could do better. But why do better when, the government says it's okay to pay 210, so that's what I could pay. Just because they say the minimum you could pay is 210 don't mean you can't pay more. So that's my thing. And also I feel like these places too that want people with degrees but only want pay minimum wage, y'all could kill. Y'all could kill. Because how you want me have a whole 4-year degree and you won't pay me 210? You got to be off your rockers. And I've had a few of those interviews too. So I'm gonna say that I don't want to say that the brain drain is as a result of this, but that's at least in my experience. I only can talk from my experience as a person, but y'all delusional, and y'all can't expect people to want to stay here and work for pennies to suffer, because you can't. Some people can make something more than nothing, but most people can't make something more than nothing. So if you want to pay me pennies, I can't have a good life off that. I can't afford to have a family with that. I can't afford to buy a house making having these low wages. So why would I stay here? You may be lucky if it's a person who likes if you're an entrepreneur, then that's different because you make your own money, you work on your own terms, but every person is not. That's not them. Every person is not a corporate worker. Every person is not somebody who's technical. You know what I'm saying? So it's something to think about. And like Selena said, like we have to, as a people and as a country, we have to sit there and ask ourselves, why do we have a skills gap? Why is this a thing? And they said that they had 13,000 applications. I know Canada is saying that they are also having a skill gap and that they plan to bring over between 1 million, I think, to 1.3 million people over the next 2 to 3 years because they have such a big gap. So our population isn't nearly as big as Canada, but then the question is, are a lot of Bahamians like gonna keep moving to the point where I don't want to say the Bahamas is non-existent, but that we have such a big gap similar to Canada. Of course it's not gonna be the exact same because of the population difference, but you get the point. Like, so what is it gonna take for us to change and try to actually be proactive instead of reactive? Because that's right now, that's what we're doing. We're being reactive. We're like, okay, we have a skill gap, so we're gonna bring people in. But the question is, what are we gonna do to get people to stay? And my recommendation would be to stop letting people feelings and actually pay them reasonable wages and not ask somebody with a 4-year degree and 5 years experience to work for 250 or 350. Because it ain't gonna happen. You could be looking for somebody forever. And then want to turn around and say, oh, ain't nobody qualified. Yes, they're qualified people. It's just you don't want to pay them. Moving on, we have talked about this topic quite a few times, and the different aspects of it. And that's the topic of rape in the country. We've been advocates for young men and women who've been sexually assaulted or who've been in abuse situations. Yeah, and just advocating for a change within the country. Now, this has been a topic again in the news, and I feel like it's important to keep addressing these issues so that people don't forget, so that we can continue to raise awareness and to try and change these issues. Now, I think this was last week sometime. The Senate President Lachelle Attlee called for the criminalization of marital rape, and she's saying that she said rape is rape no matter the context. Now, this is her exact words. Our long walk to freedom has not yet ended when the marital bed has become a violent mattress. Rape is rape, notwithstanding the context. The Bible reminds us that men ought to love their wives in the way that Christ loves the church and died for it. This love is defined in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 as being patient, kind, and not delighting in evil. Freedom and justice demand legislation which outlaws spousal rape, Ms. Attlee said. And this came during a special joint sitting at the House of Assembly that brought members of Parliament and senators together. And this meeting marked the first time a joint sitting was chaired by two women, who were the House Speaker Patricia DeVoe and Ms. Attlee. Now, we talked about this earlier in the year. We talked about it a few months ago, and we're talking about it again. And I don't just want to address marital rape only, because we have quite a few stories that we wanted to touch on, and not only on both sides of the story. I know a lot of concerns surrounding this topic was regarding to how would you say that, how would you prove basically that the rape has occurred, right? But I think the same thing can be said for the same way you would prove if it was to happen with a boyfriend and a girlfriend. There, for most people at least, this is not for everyone, but for those that do have intercourse, the general consensus is that Both parties have to agree. However, if one were to break the other body, you would be able to go to the police station and file a report. That doesn't invalidate the fact that you have been sexually assaulted just because you're in a relationship. No means no. However, in the Bahamas, we view marriage as is a contract. And a lot, I feel like a lot of Bahamians feel as though once you're married, you become one. And although this may be so in terms of spiritually wise, I guess people like to say, but when you think about it, you're still individuals. And when I think of this scenario in my head, I'm normally thinking of one of the parties forcing themselves on the other person, regardless of them saying no, and basically traumatizing them. And I feel as though that should be validated because women and men experience it. I feel like a lot of men don't come out and say things, but women are normally the ones who speak out more often than not. But they should be able to speak out. A woman shouldn't feel that, oh, I'm being raped by my husband, and I can't even go to the police because they're gonna tell me that's my husband and they ain't getting them. Women should not feel afraid to speak up. Now, I don't know if Selena disagrees or if anyone else disagrees, but that's just my two cents on it. Although I do feel like maybe there will be one or two or a small percentage of people that will maybe create false reports. But to be honest, rapes on the whole are not, they're very undocumented. A lot of people don't come forth with rapes. A lot of people don't come forth with molestation or sexual assault in this country. And that's just the reality of it. So I highly doubt that a large number of women are going to say, you know what, I'm mad at my husband tonight. So I don't want him to touch me. And he touches me, even if he may have listened, even if he listened to her and say, okay, you don't want to be touched, I'm going to leave you alone. And she's going to say, you know what, I'm going to use this as an excuse to send him to jail. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people out there who think that way, because there probably are. But I don't think it's going to cost 50% of the population or 75% of women who are married to come over and say, you know what, I'm going to falsely report my husband. Because that has been something that a lot of people have been saying, which I feel is a valid concern. However, I don't think it's going to be as vast as they're making it seem. I just don't think it's going to be that way, because I feel like rape is something that's such, I don't want to say it's shamed upon, but a lot of people are embarrassed that something like that could have happened to them, or maybe they're traumatized. Some people want to forget about it. So it's not really something that I see a lot of people lying about. People do it. Like I said, I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that. Many people's lives have been ruined because they have been falsely accused of it, which is very wrong. And there should be consequences for those people that create those false reports. They should be jailed, if you ask me, because you're ruining someone's life. But I don't think that concern should necessarily get in the way of criminalizing marital rape. I don't know if you have anything else to say, Selena, or have anything to say.
I would say that it's not an issue that has one straight solution, so to speak. I'm very happy that we're now having a forum speaking on this matter, because a lot of times, like when that come up, it was like immediately taboo, shut down, like, you know, the marriage bed is undefiled. However, I always tell my students, everyone has a right to their own opinions and their beliefs. However, when that opinion negatively affects someone else, when it is now outside of your personal sphere and you're actually causing hurt on someone else, that opinion should not be ignored. That opinion should not be justified, so to speak. And the ethics of that opinion should be called into question. And I think marital rape is not something that you can beat the Bible with and do away with, because there's nothing in the Bible that condones any form of violence, especially towards a spouse. So for those, you know, persons who are religious and have that opinion, to each his own. I know a lot of persons, they like to say, you know, you have your way, I have my way, and all of us will meet, you know. We're going to meet at the same destination. I don't know what Bible they read, but the Bible that I read said that there's one God There's one faith, there's one truth, one spirit, and the spirit of truth would lead you into all unto all truth. He said, narrow is the way that leads to salvation and few will find it, and broad is the way that leads to destruction and many will find it. So I when persons start to bring Christianity and religion into this, I simply try to withdraw back because I don't come to the same conclusions as they come to, and I think it's very unfair now. And you're basically doing what they did back then. And but anyway, that's besides the point. When it comes to rape on the whole and the criminalization of marital rape, like I said, my view on it has shifted a bit, not to say that it should not be criminalized. However, I think that we should still continue to have forums and discussions on the matter and simply do not shy away from it because it's a difficult situation. Oh, how are you going to prove this and this and that? I don't think you should shy away from the problem because of that. However, I'm now seeing more clearly that it's not a simple thing to do. And so that's the only thing that has shifted for me actually realizing that this is not going to be something simple to do. And you said that you believe that it could be justified the same way it would be justified with persons who don't know each other. I think to some extent that wouldn't work with it, seeing that especially if you live with this person and you know you have daily contact with this person because you know they try to use DNA and this and that, they could easily simply say, well, you know, that was consensual and you know X, Y, and Z. So it's still gonna be hard to prove that rape happened. It would basically be your word against that person's own, and who comes down to who has more money and who has the better attorney. And so I still don't think it's going to be a simple process, but I do believe that it's not something that should be shied away because it's not a simple process. I think, you know, trial and error, discussion, whatever the case may be, I think that it's a healthy, at least we're having starting to have this conversation, especially within the Senate. It's really good that this is happening. And you said something and I totally agree with it because recently the same issue happened to someone that I know. And I guess they always say you don't really feel it until it hits home. And I personally believe that as they're talking about this, they should also put on the table that if you are found falsely accusing someone of rape, you should get the same amount of sentencing that that person would have gotten if you know they weren't found to be innocent. Because like you said, that's literally messing up someone's life. The news is quickly to jump on stories like this, and the way that they word their articles, they make sure to cover themselves with allegedly this and that, but they know just how to use their words in order to direct the masses. So despite person seeing allegedly in their head, especially when you put no bail was granted in their head, man, that person's a rapist and they don't even follow up the story. So that person could be let go free, innocent. And but to them, when they see that name, businesses write that name off. Oh, this is a rapist, this is a rape. You know, you mess up with someone's life, especially in that social aspect. You don't know what that person could lose just by you being vindictive or for every reason, even if it's to save your own skin or the fair, you just jump up and say, well, oh, this person rapes me. It does not matter. That is a serious thing, and this is not the boy who cries wolf. This person's life, and I think you should be penalized just as much as that person would have if they weren't found to be innocent, if you actually were to send that person away, an innocent person away. So that's just my opinion on the matter. It is a serious matter, and I highly look down upon women who use it as a tool because, like you said, not everyone, but some women actually do. And just it dishonors the persons who actually go through the process, the who actually experience it. It dishonors that person who you are accusing of. It betrays them. And to me, that's just the lowest of persons, to be completely honest. And I think they should be held to some sort of accountability for that.
Okay, but going back to what you said, where you were talking, where you said, you know, it could be just what I said, it could be justified. When I was saying that, I'm not saying that it's gonna be easy. What I'm saying is that when I said it should be What I'm saying is it should be held to the same standard, is what I'm saying. If somebody comes in and says, I've been raped by my boyfriend, which in some people may, some officers may not, still may not take that seriously, but I'm talking about cases I've seen in other places of the world. They would normally take that case more seriously than if it was their husband or whatever. And you're saying, okay, I understand what you're saying. What you're saying, it's you're living with this person, or you're seeing this person on a regular basis. You're having intercourse with this person on a regular basis. However, rape in itself is difficult. There have been most times rape cases are he say, she say. Some perps are very intelligent. They use condoms, they use gloves, and there is absolutely no evidence besides the fact that the woman is probably bruised in some way, and she came in and she said, "Oh man," and they came in and they say, "I have been sexually assaulted." And rape, like I said, rape is hard and it's difficult to prove, and it's always a difficult case unless you actually you have evidence. But a lot of, but I don't say a lot of times, but there a fair amount of cases they don't actually have physical evidence. Some people don't go in to the station until days, weeks, sometimes months after it happened, all evidence has been washed away. And I'm not saying that their story is invalid. That what happened to them is still valid. So that's what I was getting at when I was saying that. I'm not saying that it's gonna be easy. Like you, like I'm not trying to say that it's not gonna be easy. It's not easy at all. It's gonna be probably two or three times more difficult because you now have to figure out how do you navigate the scenario where this person is married to this person and they normally consent to this, but this one night, the one spouse got violent or one spouse forced themselves upon on the other, and like I said, it's not something that can be easily navigated, but I agree with you that I'm glad that we're having this discourse, and I just hope that it just doesn't continue to be a discourse. I hope that it's something that we could narrow in on, and I think the only way that this probably can work is it being like case by case, because I don't think there's not one law or rule that they could put in place that would apply to every single situation, because there are laws regarding marital rape, but it's not marital rape while you're still together per se. Like if I'm married and I'm separated from my husband, we're not fully divorced yet, but I'm separated from him, and he decide I'm we've been separated for a year, we live in two different places, and he decides to come and beat me and rape me. That technically is against it would be against the law, I believe. At least what I read. So there's stuff that protects people against those type of things. But in terms of I am living with this man, we were in good standing, and he decided to throw himself on me and to abuse me, or this is that and the third, So it is very tricky, and I hope that one day we could come to some resolution with this. And then to go into the next part of it, where we were talking about people being falsely accused of rape. And I think that is absolutely disgusting. And it's you have to be a real you have to be a very cruel person to do that, because rape is something that's really vile. That's of an extreme violation. And to put someone through that, to put someone in jail for something that they didn't do, is absolutely vile. And I think that someone who, like Selena said, I agree with you that someone who makes false accusations, and it has been proven that they have made false accusations, they need to go to jail. Like they need to go to jail because we are wasting the police time. You've now put a man or a woman in jail, or had their life uprooted if they haven't been to jail, or if they're awaiting trial. You've ruined a large part of their life, maybe cost them their job, maybe their family. You never know. And you just get to go back to living life the way it was, or you may get hit with a charge for obstruction of justice or something, or wasting the police time. But do you serve your little community service and you go back to life? No. You need to you if I feel as though that could be another aspect that goes along with trying to criminalize marital rape, is that people who falsely accuse others, they need to go to jail. And I feel like that will deter some people, because some people are gonna think about that twice. Because if I'm serving, if the minimum sentence for first time offenders, I think is like 5 to 7 years, I think it is. You could go more depending, you know, every case is different. I think it's 5 to 7 years. So if you make a false accusation and it is proved that you make a false accusation, then you can serve 5 to 7 years. And so, like I said, I'm not just looking at one side of the spectrum. I'm not looking at only the potential victim, but I'm also looking at the potential the fate of the potential perpetrator, because not everyone is guilty. Sometimes people lie, and sometimes we have evil people in the world who can't get what they want, and they lie, and they ruin the lives of others, and they should be held responsible for that. So that's just my thoughts on what we could possibly do to deter people from doing things like that. And it all comes down to, oh, how do we prove this? But the same, I guess the same way, how do we prove a lot of other things in cases? We have to find ways to get evidence. Yeah, so that's just.
Agreed, I totally agree.
But before we end, too, I wanted to touch on some stuff that was said by the crisis center. I don't know if you guys know that's like where people who are battered and have suffered abuse and sexual assault and stuff can go for help, especially mainly domestic violence, I think it is. As we've mentioned them a few times. According to the founder, Dr. Sandra Dean Peterson, she said that rape and sexual assaults continue to pose a notable threat to Bahamian society, and that we need to have a greater focus on addressing problems that surround the social ill. And she said one of the most important things is for us to recognize these victims and to say that they are right to talk about it and bring attention so that we can deal with it as a country in a more effective way, which I 100% agree with. She explains that we have, but she said that with the higher number of rape statistics, education and awareness are key in helping victims to recognize what is being done to them, whether they are raped or assaulted. And she said many rape cases are never officially reported to police. If you look at our statistics, they have had their gender-based violence task force. We corrected the statistics and it was absolutely horrendous. Each number is a person. If you look at the 1990s and one of the issues, you know that there were 3,093 reports of rape, incest, and unlawful sexual intercourse. And the numbers have been going up since then. One of the issues that we need to do is to ensure that perpetrators are held accountable and that they don't get away with it. And she said, for children who were sexually abused, it is important for the community to step up and demonstrate that the community cares by assisting them in being able to identify and report instances. Now she goes on to talk about more things, but I think I got the gist of what she was saying. And I think that a lot of rapes aren't reported, and this is why I think, me personally, this is why I think that happens or has been happening for so long. I think it's because sex has been such a taboo topic among in the country, and it's not just in the Bahamas. It's been happening all around the world. I think it's because in this country we tend to avoid that topic. We don't talk to our children about it. Some parents may have the birds and bees talk, but it's very vague. We have a few in there, sprinkled in there, who are very detailed and explain it to their children how contraceptives works and stuff like that. But a lot of the time, parents avoid the topic like the bubonic plague, and they refuse to think that they're what 11, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old, 16, even 17, sometimes even 20 could be engaging in sexual intercourse. And I feel as though it's not about thinking that, oh no, they could not possibly be doing this, they're too young. No, that's not the purpose of having the conversation. The conversation is to inform them about this, to educate them, to help them understand what could happen if they decided to have sexual intercourse, not to scare them, to inform and to let them know that, hey, if you do X, Y, and Z, this could be the possible consequence. Here is how you avoid this. Now, if you decide at any time that you are interested that you're going to do this, please let me know so that I can make sure that you are doing things correctly. And I know we may not want to look had it like this, but that's just what it is. That's how the conversation should go. And I feel as though a lot of young adults, especially young girls, because of their I don't have the exact statistics right with me right now, but a lot of young women, young children ha have been sexually abused as kids, and they didn't speak up about it because they felt like they were going to be blamed. At least I think they felt that they were going to be blamed, or they're shamed, that this is something that I wasn't supposed to do, and it, not understanding that this had nothing to do with them. It wasn't their fault. It was something that was forced on them. So I think it's shame is one. Shame is one. Two is embarrassed. Yeah, well, shame and embarrassment is kind of the same thing. Shame slash embarrassment. And then I think not, the fear of not being believed. And then also the fear of thinking that it'll just disappear over time, that they'll just forget about it. I think that's three reasons people don't speak up about it. Some people function in terms of, you know what, I'm just gonna move on. I'm gonna work past this. Well, not work past it technically, because it's not, you're not working past anything, just forgetting, trying to forget about it. They're just like, I'm gonna try and forget about this and act like it never happened, not knowing that the weight that it may be holding on their life. And I generally think people not coming out about sexual assault, especially as children, goes back to not being educated about sex in the first place and being ashamed of having to tell my parents that this happened to me and this is something that I wasn't supposed to be doing, basically, even though it wasn't their fault.
Who said it best? I have nothing now.
Y'all, like, this is something that's been plaguing our country for a long time. The statistics have been used from the 1990s, which was what, 30 years ago? Yeah, it's about 30 some years ago, and it's been going on way before that. It can be traced back a very long time, sexual assault. So I think, especially, I feel like especially among children, it's been become something that's involved in our culture of aunts and uncles bothering little kids, and that's very sick. And I implore parents to pay attention. If you realize that uncle taking a little too much interest in Susie Mae, or Annie taking too much interest in Billy John, like, pay attention to your children and their behaviors, because if you pay it really close attention, you would notice when something changes or when they're uncomfortable. And yeah, I feel like that's the only way we could prevent at least assault as to children, paying attention, trying to have your open communication with them and educating them about sex and who's not supposed to touch them, and stuff like that. That let your kids know, like, hey, that's not okay. From a 5, 6, 7, from they can speak and understand well, you should be having, I don't want to say the talk, but the first conversation about who should be touching you where and so on and so forth, so that they understand that, hey, this is something that isn't normal. And if somebody does this to me, I need to go and tell my parents. So let's just continue to have this discourse. I think we can come to a solution with this. It is a complex issue. It's not something that's going to happen at the blink of an eye, or it's going to happen overnight. But it's good to know that this is something that we're thinking about and something that we're trying to fix. Not just marital rape, but rape and sexual assaults and abuse and molestation. We've been having a lot of attention on it over the last few years in this country, and I'm glad to see that we're trying to change this. I think we had a very insightful conversation today. I enjoyed speaking with Selena. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Candid, where we have real talks with real people. You guys can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Candid242 to keep up with us and see what we're doing. So yeah, keep it real, Bahamas.